FM4
Interview Podcast.
Er ist einer der umtriebigsten Protagonisten der neuen und sehr jungen Jazz- und Soul-Szene Londons, die mit ihrer Multikulti-Einstellung gegen die Engstirnigkeit des Brexit-Englands anspielt. Christian Lehner im Gespräch mit dem Songschreiber, Produzenten und Sänger Jordan Rakai über die Jazz-Revolution an der Themse und warum Rakais neues Album Origin zwar runtergeht wie heiße Schokolade, aber dennoch eine Warnung ist.
Hey Jordan, how are you doing? It's a rainy day in Berlin and I heard you had a challenging night. What happened? Hi.
Hey, how you doing? It's good to be here. We slept in the tour bus, which is like really fun. It's the second time I've done it and it was a great sleep. I feel rejuvenated. I feel great.
How big is the crew? I mean, you never know. Like 6 guys, 25, 30?
No, there's one sound guy, there's one tech guy, and there's 4 in the band. So there's only 6 of us and a driver. So it's a nice, small, tight-knit crew. Mm-hmm.
And I think it was necessary because all the rooms are booked out in Berlin, I learned, because of some weird congress that's going on.
Oh, is that why? That makes sense. I'm lucky because usually in my band, there's like 9 of us. So we're coming with like a smaller band for this short run. So that would have been like a very packed bus if there was like 12 of us on there. So. Mm-hmm.
So I guess for you, it's essential to have a good band on stage. Like everyone likes a good band, but you say you are usually like nearly 9 people on stage. Is that important for you to have this full backup to say so?
It's the most important, basically, because I used to watch Stevie Wonder live. I've watched every live video on YouTube and his bands. He's got like 2 drummers, 2 percussion players, he's got like 15 piece band. And I believe in playing the music live and I don't like using laptop or track. So the ideal band for me would be like a Stevie Wonder size band because my recordings have like 3 guitar parts, 2 drum parts. You know, there's like so many pieces to the puzzle. I need to like try and recreate it live. So the bigger band, the better for me.
I hear Stevie Wonder big influence since day one with Jordan Rakai.
Massive, massive influence. He's my mum's favorite artist. So I've been singing him since I was like 5 years old around the house. And yeah, I feel like I know the words and chords to like every song he's got. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I guess soul is brought to you in the mother's milk, to say so. It's a strange phrase that I'm using now with my weak English.
Yeah, it is. Like the soul, Motown, disco stuff came from mum, and the more left field, alternative, sometimes rocky stuff came from my dad. So like Frank Zappa, Pink Floyd was my dad, and my mum was like Michael Jackson, Prince, Stevie Wonder, Marvin Gaye, Curtis Mayfield. So it's a nice like blend of styles.
Talking about your background, you are a real Commonwealth guy, right? You were born in New Zealand,
yeah.
Grew up in, or spent a lot of time in Australia and then moved to London.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So born in New Zealand, moved to Australia when I was 3, I think. Lived there all the way till I was 21 and then moved just recently, 4 years ago, to London. So raising that Union Jack hard.
So I think you are, of course, also very... upset with what's going on in the country right now with Brexit. You guys, I think, I don't know how many questions you had to answer to concerning this issue so far, because I think with every English artist that it is interviewed at the moment, it's coming up. But it means a lot of restriction if it goes through, and it seems like it will for musicians when simple things like, not simple, but complicated things like putting on a tour, stuff like this, right?
Exactly. And when I originally decided to leave Australia to come to London, I thought I was going to be, you know, in the metropolis of Europe, free movement in Europe. And so touring was like essential and ideal. And that's the really worrying thing about a lot of independent artists from the UK and also from Europe trying to come to the UK. If we now have to pay visas like we do when we have to go to America, really expensive, and that makes tours impossible, that's going to like stunt the creative industry, and then it's going to become like, you know, virtual concerts like on your phone or something rather than being able to like go and perform in front of people like in their home country. So it's definitely a worry, and hopefully like that the visas are fine and they let creatives move freely within Europe.
Singer-songwriters are sensible guys and have a sensor for what's going on in the society very often, and it ends up in their music. Reading about your new album Origin, it seems that it also like takes concern of a broader spectrum, not only personal issues. Is that right? Was that like Brexit stuff that influenced it in a certain way?
It was more so my fascination with technology. I've been listening to a lot of these podcasts where guests were like experts in like artificial intelligent morality or like coding with Google. And it really fascinated me how there was this whole world that's going to be inevitable where technology will become so powerful in civilization that it made me think about concepts and like sort of like a future dystopian science fictional world where I exist in this world where technology prevails, and like how am I coping. And so it's the first sort of album where I'm talking outwardly. Like my first two albums were very like introspective about my own sort of situation, but I feel like you know, I do have a bit of a voice now, but though it's not much of an activist album talking about how we can like stand up against technology, it's more so like my take on how I potentially see the world going.
Mm-hmm. And it is a rather not so optimistic view. Did you take that out from the podcast? I'm mentioning that because I recently did an interview with Holly Herndon. I don't know if you know her. And she developed an AI, artificial intelligence, as a musician.
Yeah, and she has a very positive view and optimistic view of it. But all these experts, all like robot designers, and they talk about like this moment of singularity where we're developing really intelligent computers, but to the point now where they're so intelligent that they then develop themselves, and then it's exponential. We can no longer control how much faster they can develop because their like insane processing power is way stronger than the brain. And I personally think that's worrying. Like if you talk about the morality of artificial intelligence, who's going to govern that? And if it's not the artificial intelligence, will it be like a corrupt set of people that can dictate what it does? So I don't really think there's any positive way of looking at that, because you know what people are like. Humans in power can be evil. So if humans are in power of a really strong artificial intelligent governing system, then what's that going to look like for us? And I don't think it's that positive.
So Stanley Kubrick got it all right with HAL, the artificial intelligence in 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Exactly. And that's why I only recently in London, they're showing like a Stanley Kubrick. They're rebringing out all the movies. And I talked about my concepts with some of my friends, and they're like, you got to watch Space Odyssey. And I watched it and I was like, wow, he wrote that like, I don't know how many years ago, 40 years ago or something. And the fact that it's so ahead of its time is just, and Blade Runner as well, the first Blade Runner is like, they talk about the human hybrid and how do you know what's real or not, and you lose sense of reality. And I think that's like super powerful. And I think it's going to be the same with us. Like, are we going to lose sense of the human inside, or are we going to be able to distinguish between artificial and real?
When you took in all this stuff, were you on the defensive for a while? Did it like put you fear in you? And how did you cope with that?
At first I was really excited by the concepts of virtual reality, artificial intelligence, you know, human and robot integrated systems. But I only started getting worried about it when I thought about not just those short-term things, more about the macro level of human existence, because it's sort of like a realization that if we continue to go in this way and we're so willing to let it happen, then will we lose the true humanity in ourselves, or are we now going to evolve into this hybrid species now where we're half robot, whatever, I don't know, that's in the future. But are we going to lose sense of like the rawness, making mistakes, falling in love, having direct connections, which I think is the beautiful thing about being human, like making all these errors and just being human, like the animal that I think we are. And that's what made me worried about losing that sense of myself.
It's interesting because what I take out of what makes you skeptical about these technologies is that they are maybe too human, because Holly Herndon sees it the other way around. She's in line with it because it's human, and it's human and it's an extension of our minds and stuff. But as you said before, humans fuck up the world, so why shouldn't machines?
Interesting. That's why I think she's got an amazing perspective. I think I love her perspective as well. I've read so many interviews about it because I found out I was doing this, and she's releasing an album at a similar time, and everyone has referenced her quite a bit. And then I read into her, and I think it's really fascinating. But yeah, like you said, I think if humans, you know, she's sort of approaching it like, if, you know, if you're a humanist like myself, if you believe like we've made the progression from monkey to here and the intelligence has really lifted, all it is another progression from human to this next species. So maybe that's a bonus. You can't look in the past and try and like hold on to humanity, but she's like embracing the new change. But I guess I'm nostalgic in the sense like my child, I had a fun childhood and it was great being a human. And I feel like I want other people to experience the same thing I have. So partly, you know, it could be selfish, but I feel like being human is a powerful thing, especially in this current world. And I feel like we have a lot more to give.
Mm-hmm. Mm. It's interesting because the music you do, or maybe it fits perfectly together, is so not technology based. It is in a certain way, because way back then, Stevie Wonder was completely a technical geek in a certain way, and he completely revolutionized how music was arranged and put together. And but now, like this thing that you are doing is so organic in a certain way. So speaking to the soul, I think that's the purpose of it, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I wanted to make the music on the album, like the actual sound, is quite nostalgic. It sounds, you know, sort of like a modern 70s record where there's like modern production, but it's like old school songwriting. But I wanted to blend like old school sound with like the lyrics so that it could exist with like futuristic lyrics, nostalgic sound meets in like the present. And I think that works really well because you can sort of like lure people in to listen to the music and not be too alienating with like futuristic. Like if the whole thing was quite heavily atmospheric and synth based and like artificially produced, firstly, that's like not my sound. But secondly, it's quite hard to, it's not very subtle. Like I like the subtlety of the soul music, but talking about the macro issue of like humanity and technology, I think for me, it's a better way of doing it. Like having a more wider topic rather than like talking about robots and, you know, like stuff like that.
And Jordan, why did you tend towards soul in the first place? What does the music give to you, and what is worth sharing it?
It always seems to be so honest. Like when in the 70s, when they were writing soul music, they were speaking a lot about what was happening in America, and especially with the African-American rights and stuff like that, all because all the artists I listened to were mainly African-American, and they always spoke so honestly, and it was like super powerful. So
I think we're talking about people like Marvin Gaye, Curtis Mayfield.
Yeah, Marvin Gaye, Curtis Mayfield, like James Brown, Al Green, Stevie Wonder, even earlier like Sam Cooke and stuff, Otis Redding. They all were talking like about stuff quite political. So it's always like so true. And then also it's always really amazing. You know, it's sort of like jazz-based harmony, but it's groove-based. So it's like best of both worlds for me because I've never really delved massively into the world of deep jazz, like old school jazz, but soul brings elements of that from like gospel and jazz music, but it makes it like fun and accessible and powerful and easily sing-alongable. So it's just an amazing eclectic sort of like blend of all these amazing genres. So it's the best for me.
And in a certain way, you seem to hit a nerve because in the UK at the moment, there is something like a young soul and jazz scene, even the rap scene is going back more to conscious rap. I'm talking about people you work together with, Loyal Karner. I talked to Nilufar Yanya. She comes from a little bit of a different corner, but then Connie Constance, and then Tom Misch and Sampha, you know, it's what's going on there?
That's, I feel super lucky. Like when I moved to London 4 years ago, my friend said to me like, oh yeah, London's not that popping. And then like a year later, all these people sort of like must have graduated from uni at the same time. And like, there's this really cool bubbling soul scene. And even different pockets of London have like different sounds, which you find from living there now. But like the South London scene is very jazz based, but the North London scene is very like, you know, more soulful, electronic, neo soul based. And then like West London sort of like dancier based, like Kaidi Tatham and amazing dance music coming out of like amazing jam nights. And that's what you get from London. There's just like so much bubbling scene. And I think when I was growing up in Australia, I was influenced a lot by like American soul music. And I feel like a lot of the world is obviously influenced because that's the home of soul music. But London definitely, and the UK have like their own sound now. It's not like Americanized soul music. They have their sound. Like, you know, it's more, I would say it's more somber, more emotional, like darker and deeper. So yeah, it's really cool. Whereas American, I feel like American soul is really fun and summery and really polished and like amazingly produced. So it's nice to be influenced by like both styles now, living in London and like still taking the American stuff in like D'Angelo and Anderson Park and people like that. They're still delivering amazing soul music. But the UK, like working with Tom Misch, who's now like on a big trajectory, and Loyal Kana, learning a lot how they approach it has influenced my sound a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And why do you think it's so popular with young people?
I think, I honestly think, I could be wrong, but for me, when Robert Glasper released Black Radio like 7 years ago, that was a big shift. And then D'Angelo came back, and then Hiatus Coyote, like it was all happening at the same time. And then I think people, it became cool. So like you go to a jazz gig now in London.
And also, Kendrick Lamar and the Vogue scene from the West Coast.
Exactly. Actually, I forgot about that. Kendrick Lamar with the Tupin Butterfly, the whole like jazz hip hop album, that brought massive light onto it. Then Kamasi Washington released an album which like sold 200,000 copies. And I went to a Kamasi gig recently, and everyone in the crowd was like 20, really cool hipster. They weren't like, you know, 7-year-old jazz heads. They were like young kids because it's cool now. So I think it's a good thing. Like a lot of people are like, oh, the cool people go into jazz gigs because they want to be cool. But I'm thinking like, for me, it's better than pop. It's good that jazz is popular. So it's really exciting in the world right now for like where music's sort of leaning towards. So I'm existing like in a cool place.
Connie Constance told me first when she was interested in jazz, there was a barrier because the people she dealt with at the beginning, it was all about knowledge and there was a certain academic entry level. But now that's different. She said it's a little bit like a jazz and soul revolution, that just young people now doing it more from the gut than from the brain.
It's so true. Like a lot of those universities used to be really conservatoires and you had to dress nice. Like it was a very like elitist genre. But now there's a lot of attitude. Like there's a massive scene in London that sort of, I sort of call it like Afrobeat jazz, like bands like Ezra Collective or something. And
brilliant album out right now.
Yeah, they're great. They're great. But they, you know, they're guys that like come from, I think they're like first generation from African and Caribbean families. And they're like the attitude they play in the music is amazing. And they just have like a sense of attitude that you didn't hear, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years ago. It used to be really polished and jazz was like that elitist genre. Well, at least for me. I was young though, so I don't really know the story. But now it seems like a very cool people with attitude. They have a lot to say. They have a lot they want to like write about and sing about. So yeah, it's in a good spot, I think.
And usually when that happens is you have to seek your own places. Not go to the traditional jazz club, but make your own venue, get your own club. Is that also a thing?
There is. There's so many of my friends that have like different jam nights. So like on a Saturday, there's like an underground, they call like a hip hop cypher, where there's like guys in the band playing like basically jazz music, but it's all improvised and rappers come up and freestyle over the top. And then that goes for like 4 hours. So it's like pure freedom of expression. And then there's other nights that like, you know, I've guested on where like it's a house band. They're just improvising all night and vocalists come up and do like a guest thing. So I've done that and it's been cool because like the crowd might not know I'm there and I get up and sing and then Tom Misch jumps up and Loyal Kana jumps up. So it's really cool how like there's a lots of amazing nights in London where you can see that sort of music on the regular.
And on the new Rosie Lowe album, I think there are so many people in the choir. Is that right? Like who is guesting this? I think it's one song.
Yeah.
The Bird or
yeah. On the Bird song. So she sent me a message saying, I want this song to have a choir in it. I want you to be a part of it. And can you try and sing as much as West Coast G-Funk style as possible? So I had to sing like an American accent and very like Nate Doggy. And she got like Jamie Woon, Quabs, Jamie Liddell, all like some of my favorite singers in London and me, I think. And we like quadruple stacked our vocals. So there's like four of me, four of Jamie Woon, four. So there's like 16 people, 16 voices in that choir. And that Rosie Lowe album is amazing. I think she's another one in the London soul scene that, again, sounds slightly different, but she's got her sound. It's very UK, I think. So, yeah.
Before talking about your music again, your solo music and your album, let's talk concerning this whole jazz thing, scene thing, your collaboration with Loyal Kana, because I think it was massive on his new records. So how you guys like have a special connection?
Yeah, so we've been friends since I first moved, because I knew Tom Misch when I first moved because I was his friend, and Tom has worked with him before. So we had always been friends, but we had never worked with each other. And it was sort of like a joke over the years. He used to say like, man, when are we going to get in the studio and work together? And so when we had our first session, it just really clicked straight away. The first song we made, and we made it in like a couple of hours, was the song called Ottolenghi, which is like the big single that dropped first. And then he was like, man, let's book another day. And then we booked like 4 days and we came out with 4 songs, all of which made the album. I sang only on one of them, but I wrote the other song that Georgia Smith was on. And I produced 2 other songs. It was really like special working with him, because he knows what he likes, but he also gave me a lot of freedom to do my own thing. So I guess he trusted my sound. So it's a great working relationship. Yeah.
So Jordan, what you tell me, I get out, you're a 360-degree guy. You produce, you play the instruments, most of them, I guess,
yeah.
And you sing.
Yes, I produce, sing, play. I do like most of it myself, and I also love different genres, so I can do the hip-hop thing, production for Loyal, but you know, sometimes I...
You also rap?
No, I can't rap, but I've also made like classical pieces and like big string arrangements, and I just like dipping my foot into each sort of style to see what really interests me, but keeping me on my toes, and I love challenging myself. So yeah.
Are you classically trained, or did you like have one kind of education and then just the rest you just put on top of it?
No, I'm actually mostly on all the instruments and like learning do stuff on the computer. I'm all self-taught, but I did like in primary school and high school, like there's a music class like where all the kids like learn, like you clap along to the beat or something, but I never got personal tutelage or anything like that. But I think that's when you learn by yourself, it's cool, because then you develop your own sound and your own technique. So I think it's good for me.
Origin is the title of your new record. Say Something is a big hit, and I think the powerful thing about this song is that it's directing you, that it's a direct message, but it's vague at the same time. It doesn't say something against Donald Trump.
Yeah, no.
It doesn't say something against AI, but I think it's a kind of motivational song to say so. Right?
Exactly. I love doing that with lyrics. I don't love pigeonholing a topic so that there's no room for interpretation. And I also love doing lyrics that can apply to different eras, because the song is obviously about speaking up, saying something for my species against this wave of tech, so that, you know, can we fight it? Come on, people, let's come together and do this. But it can also be applied, like you said, for even speaking up against current situations, like all the climate stuff that was happening in London, all the stuff that's happening in America lately. And it brings people together. So it's sort of like, in a way, like a song about activism, but speaking up for yourself, like you have a voice and you can use it.
Mm-hmm. And then Mad World, I think it's the first song on the record. That's a description of, we talked a little bit about it, but maybe you can just give me the 1-2 ideas about this song.
So yeah, I wanted to start the album with something slightly darker to set the tone. And Mad World is about me sort of being in this futuristic world, understanding like this is a chaotic place and what have we come to, and like, have you know, I've lost all hope. So it sets the scene like this person in total like dismay and like sadness. And then the rest of the album sort of tells different stories of how it can apply, but Mad World sets the really dark underlying tone of how this is a dark place and have we made the right decision to let technology into our lives.
We end this interview on a sunny place. Jordan, maybe at the end, their summer is coming up, maybe you can give our listeners 1-2 tips where to go to dig some real jazz in London at the moment, 1-2 clubs or locations.
The best jam night is they do it every second Saturday. It's called Unit 31. It's held in Limehouse. It's an amazing, it's just guys, it's what I said before, it's like improvised music and rappers, singers, soloists jump up and they play. So that's definitely the best party. I feel like that's one of the best parties in London, Unit 31.
Thank you, Jordan Rakai. The new album, Origin, is out in the mid of June. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
FM4 Interview Podcast.